Keller. I'm here with Ben Benita. Ben has a very interesting business that he's in. He helps actually do for homeowners what some homeowners would like help in doing. That is, he helps arrange short sales and he helps arrange workout agreements for people who would rather have an expert do it instead of having to do it on their own. And I think that what Ben has to say is extremely interesting. He has so many good tips and answers that I think you knew you'd want to hear about. So I'm glad that we have him on the line today. How is your day going today, Ben?
Good. Having a great day. Another great day here.
Good. Good.
Hey, all is well.
Good. Maybe if you wouldn't mind, we talked before the call a little bit, and you gave me permission to ask you about your background in terms of how you got into this business, because your personal experience had a lot to do with it.
Yes, and yeah, I can try to keep it as short as possible. I've been a full-time investor now for about 5 years. Like most people, talked about it for a long time before I took the plunge. And again, to my benefit, I got in when you literally could buy anything and make money on it if you could sit on it for 6 months. So I, again, found a mortgage guy to, again, use some of those really crazy loans. Looking back now, definitely got in over my head. We owned as many as 26 properties. Actually, one time, again, all on my credit, my wife's credit, again, through the creative financing that, you know, was available, it is no longer now available. And then, again, probably January, I say December of 05, we were sitting on about $2 million in equity. My wife and I had 14 properties between us. Again, we're intending to sell everything that spring and get, again, full on into commercial real estate, which is, again, I have a great interest in that as well. But again, quickly, as again, most of the people listening, if you remember 06 in springtime, those 14 properties, we were able to sell off a few of them. We got down to about 9 properties. At one point, we were covering a little over $40,000 a month in mortgages. Had the cash, believe it or not, had the cash to do it for about 4 months. And then again, started missing payments as, you know, the market turned. We were unable to sell some of our properties. Again, tried all the tricks, giving away cars, prepaying mortgage and everything. But again, we got caught with our pants down, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, and ended up with about $5.2 or $5.3 million in mortgages. In August of 2006, actually had one of my own properties set to go to foreclosure.
Your own home, the home you were living in.
Correct, exactly. Yeah, we were, again, behind on payments. We were using credit cards everything we could. You know, we maxed out our lines of credit and credit cards trying to, you know, stay afloat, hoping some of our homes would sell. And
so basically at that point, you were, you had over $5 million in mortgage debt. You were living on borrowing money from credit cards. You were struggling to make payments that you couldn't make. And was this in a hot market, area of the country? I mean, were houses selling or?
Yeah, they were. Again, when I got started, again, the market was red hot, and again, we kind of budgeted for a slower market turn in 06 than what actually happened. We were, every property we had was located right outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. And again, market was red hot, and it got blue cold, I guess, is the opposite of that, you know, spring of last year. And yeah, like I said, we got caught with more properties than we could afford and ended up, again, Richard, like I mentioned, ended up filing, my wife and I both did, filing a Chapter 7 bankruptcy because we, again, at the time, I knew a little bit, not nearly as much as I do now, about loan workouts, short sales. Heard different things from different people. Again, it was, in my opinion, relatively new, even as many as, you know, 6, 8, 10 months ago. Again, spoke with a few bankruptcy attorneys. It definitely turned out to be a great decision for us in our particular situation. But again, I've become much wiser. Again, I've learned a whole lot having gone through the bankruptcy process myself. Having now spoken with several other investors that are currently in and have gone through, you know, my situation. Again, it's much easier to relate to these, you know, homeowners, other investors, anybody who's, you know, contemplating bankruptcy or somebody who's upside down on their houses or, again, afraid to call the mortgage companies. I, again, can absolutely attest to that. We were getting they're pretty obnoxious with their phone calls. We're getting quite a few calls a day. Again, on my work line and our home numbers, you know, hey, do you guys have our money? No, we don't. We tried, again, before we knew what to say and what to do, you know, to work through some of the loan workout programs. And again, just there's a lot of truth in, you know, knowing what you're doing and not knowing what you're doing. So we, again, at the time had minimal success. I definitely believe now we could have worked some things out, had some short sales done on our properties. But again, a lot of that stuff got wiped out with the bankruptcy. So
at the time, you were without the knowledge that you have now, and so you found that it was very hard. You couldn't really easily make these workout agreements, but if you had to do it now, you feel that you could.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Understanding, I think the big difference is knowing why the banks don't want the properties back. Everybody hears, you know, banks are not in the business of owning real estate, they're in the bank of loaning money. Well, there's a lot of, and again, if I want to get into this now or later, there's a lot of bigger reasons why, you know, banks definitely do not want to be in real estate. How it affects their ability to borrow funds is the primary reason. But again, yeah, knowing what I do now, things would have gone much smoother. Even through the bankruptcy, we would have probably been able to keep our heads above water for much longer and possibly not even had to file the bankruptcy. But again, hindsight, like to say, is, you know, always 20/20.
Well, the important thing, I think, is that we can relate to what you've been through so much, and so many of our listeners are going through it now, and you can relate so well. I think that's, you could be very helpful for them just for that. I mean, it must have been difficult for you and your relationship and your wife to be in that position for that period. It must have been very, very hard just on a personal level.
Yeah, you can. Again, I can't honestly recommend bankruptcy to many people, but the great thing about it is you realize what, like I said, I'm getting choked up here, what's really important. You know, my wife, God bless her, has been an angel through all this. There were definitely some of the most stressful times we've ever had in our lives. I've got three children. You know, we try to keep our heads up and smile as much as possible, but I'm sure they sense something was going on. But again, you learn who your close friends are and who you can really count on when you're in trouble. A lot of people, if you ever need anything, you know, you hear that. If you ever need anything, if you're ever in trouble, give me a call. Well, when you actually ask people for help, particularly financial help, it's very difficult. And B, again, like I said, you find out who's really there for you and who's not, you know, who's willing to, you know, help with you. Again, put food on the table, keep the lights on, you know, I've got three little ones in school, you know, help pay for the kids' schooling. Again, like I said, some people are there for you, and some people, again, make excuses. And again, if you ever want to weed out, you know, who your true friends are and who's really going to be there for you, you'll definitely find out if you go through bankruptcy, because, like I said, it's tough. You can't imagine the stress it puts on a relationship. Like I said, we've come out much stronger, much better, and we're...
Yes.
And doing a lot better now.
Sure. Oh, that's wonderful. What has it, in retrospect or looking on it, has bankruptcy really harmed your credit the way that you thought it would?
It's not, and again, it's completely just my opinion. Quite honestly, I believe credit is more overrated, I think, than people give credit to. Honestly, I think a lot of the people preaching that you've got to have great credit and you've got to watch this and got to watch that are coming from the banks. I know once my bankruptcy is discharged, as I sit here talking to you today, my credit was as low as, my mid-score was as low as 460. And again, as I sit here talking to you today, I could go out this afternoon, get a car loan. I could go out this afternoon, buy a house. The only difference between me and someone with a great credit score, you know, they're going to get the 6-7% interest rates. I'm going to pay 8 or 9% interest and have to put some more money down. Well, again, when I'm talking with homeowners, you know, if you've got a place to live and you've got a car payment, your credit can take a hit for 6 months, 12 months. Again, foreclosure stays on your credit report for 7 years. Bankruptcy is on there for 10 years. I was just discharged this past February. So, again, this is, as I understand it, as early as 2 years after the bankruptcy has been discharged, I've been told that mortgage companies, they look at your bankruptcy. You know, they understand that, you know, again, it happened 2 years ago. And again, it's not nearly as detrimental as people think. Again, I certainly encourage everyone to keep a great credit score. But if the big thing holding you back from, again, doing the bankruptcy or doing the foreclosure, again, in my opinion, is you're worried about your credit. Again, I just ask people straight. I'm a straight shooter. Hey, you know, how much is your mortgage each month? And they'll, again, in Northern Virginia, it's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, sometimes $5,000, $6,000 a month. And you know, I can just ask them, hey, is your keeping your credit score at $700 at $700, you know, worth you paying, you know, $3,000 a month for? And I'm like, pretty much any car loan you get, any mortgage you get, you're not going to have a $3,000 a month swing, you know, because your credit's down a little bit. You know, if there's two people applying for a loan, one's got a 700 credit score, one's got a 600 credit score. Again, the higher credit score is going to get the 6-7% interest rates. The lower credit score is going to pay the higher interest rates. But again, those higher interest rates are not going to result in what your mortgage payment is currently, you know, $3,000, $4,000 a month.
Right.
And encourage people to miss payments. But when you sit down and look at the numbers, a lot of times what I have convincing – or people have this trouble doing is making decisions. I mean, that's the bottom line.
They don't want to make a decision, can I afford to live here or do I have to move?
Exactly, exactly. And once, I mean, it's a – we, again, last summer was very – we were 3 or 4 months before, debating whether or not we should do the bankruptcy. And, again, the best thing you can do is just make the darn decision and go with it. Once the decision's made, there's a huge burden that's off your shoulders. There's no more what if. It's, hey, I made the decision to let the house go to I don't suggest letting it go to foreclosure, but, once that decision's made, a huge burden is lifted off your shoulders.
Well, I do think that that's necessary. If somebody has got in a position where they can't afford their monthly payment, we had a bankruptcy lawyer who's very well known on the program recently, and he said that bankruptcy doesn't affect any of your secured loans. In other words, it's not going to change your mortgage payments.
Exactly.
It may delay the lender from foreclosing for a couple of months.
Exactly.
But it's not going to do anything for you. And if you can't afford to live in your house because the payments are too high, either you're going to be able to get the lenders to accept a lower payment or you're going to have to move.
Exactly.
And so you help people in your profession work now, day-to-day, full-time. You help people make that decision and you help them either get their lender to agree to lower payment somehow or work out on their delinquency or move. But you're saying that it's just very hard for people to make that decision. What should I do?
Yeah, it's exactly. I tell people we're not here to buy your house or force you anything. We tell them we're here as a consultant. We're here as a – the name of my company is Ohana Home Savers. Think of us as – it's our slogan. Think of us as family and relax. We're here to help you. It's more – think of me like your brother, your cousin, somebody who's been there. I've gone through it. You got questions. I can tell you what's going to happen if you make decision A, decision B, decision C. If you're able to do a workout and you can't, work it out, I can tell you the results and tell you exactly what's going to happen. The biggest problem I think a lot of homeowners have, is, like I said, it's just not, they have no idea what, what loan workouts are, how it's going to affect them. Same thing with the foreclosures, the bankruptcies. Once you educate them and say, hey, loan modification is this. If you do it, here's what's probably going to happen. If you do a foreclosure, here's probably what's going to happen. And, again, a lot of them, most of them will make the decision right there on the phone and work with us. Some of them will let me think about it. And, again, we're low pressure, but, tell people that the sooner they make the decision, the sooner you're going to be through this. I tell everybody on the phone, life is tough now, but if your life were on a VCR, if you could fast forward 6 months, where do you want to be in 6 months? You want to have all this done behind you? Your credit's going to take a hit, 6 months from now. Again, depending, each situation's different, but if they can do it financially, 6 months from now, you can have your mortgage back on track. You can be, just smooth chugging along. And it's, once people stop focusing so much on, gosh, how am I going to sleep tonight? What about tomorrow? Am I going to get the money for this and that? And kind of get them, thinking long term, hey, this is a hiccup. There's a ton of people in your situation. I subscribe to foreclosure lists. I get lists of anywhere from 200 to 400 people per week just in the Northern Virginia counties that are headed to foreclosure. So, again, once they see that there's a lot of other people going through it, again, they're much more willing to open up, and it's been a big benefit, again, with me having actually gone through it personally to say, hey, I've been there. I know what the sleepless call, the sleepless nights are like. I know how tough the phone companies are when they call, and
right. Right.
Here's your options. Let's get you through this. And
now, what type of situations, Ben, are the sort that lenders will bend over backwards to work things out, and why?
There's a couple. Each situation is kind of piece by, kind of more case by case. If there's any specifically that the lenders are concerned with, it's I would say older homes are the ones. I mean, just kind of common sense stuff. I don't know. Definitely when dealing with the banks, the short sales, older homes that need work are no-brainers for banks. They're very willing to, again, do anything they can to keep you in that house. In my opinion, as the market is now, banks are starting to come around, and because there are their REOs, the real estate owned, their properties owned departments are, getting bigger literally by the day. Banks are becoming much more flexible as far as with terms, the type of loan programs they're willing to, do and not do.
Well, so let's take the first thing you said. You said if someone's in an older home, that mm-hmm. sort of surprises me, that they're more likely to be able to get the bank's cooperation in working things out.
Yeah, we've had, and again, definitely with short sales, I've not done a, I've done far more short sales than we have loan modifications. But again, once when the process starts, the banks always send out a rep to do a BPO, it's a broker's price opinion, to get some type of idea. Hey, Ben says his house is worth X. The homeowner thinks his house is worth X. They'll send somebody out to get, you know, an unbiased opinion. When that report comes back and the guy says, hey, you know, this house has water damage, it's in a bad area, again, banks get nervous. They don't want that house. It's just, it's, you know, bad for the bank. If they had to take back a house, they'd much rather have a nicer house in a nicer neighborhood than a house that's, with a sign of subjective too, depending on the numbers. It's again, it's very case by case.
Oh, that makes sense. But now, why did they do a broker's price opinion, a BPO, instead of an appraisal? Because I know when I have gotten my home loans in the past, they did an appraisal. But why did they rely on a broker instead in this situation?
Again, it's my understanding they're just less expensive. They broker's price opinions generally cost a bank anywhere from $50 to $150 to get done. Again, I have not seen actual receipts of this, is what I've been told from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and appraisals tend to be much more detailed. A broker's price opinion, generally, all the agent's going to do is drive by the outside of the house to make sure, again, it's a house that's standing. They want to know if somebody's living there or not living there. And again, they'll run some comps, get a general opinion of the house, and submit something to the bank. An appraisal tends to be much more detailed. The appraiser's going to actually get out of his car, a BPO. That's a good way to look at it. BPOs, the agents generally don't even get out of their car.
I see.
Appraisals, the agent, the appraiser can actually get out of his car, do a much more detailed report than, a BPO. And
so the bank is looking at either a workout or a short sale. They're also looking at the house itself to determine what's in their best interests.
Exactly.
I see. And I suppose the agent might give them more subjective things that might be more important than an appraisal might. I don't know. It's interesting. And what are the things that get the lender to agree to an actual loan workout as opposed to a short sale?
The loan workouts tend to be a good way to distinguish the two. Loan workouts are generally for persons who want to stay in the home. Short sales are generally for people who need to sell or want to sell but can't because they've been over financed. We do loan workouts. When people call, it's one of the first questions. We ask them, hey, if you could stay in your home, you know, would you like to, or, you know, you're just looking to get done with this headache and, move on from it. With the loan workout, again, we negotiate with the bank and say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, there's a, similar to a short sale package, there's a packet of documents that we sent in explaining, you know, Mr. Smith or Mrs. Smith lost their job, went through a divorce, you know, their interest rate adjusted. Here's the situation. Here's what's going on. You know, they can no longer afford, say, $2,500 a month. But they can now afford, you know, only $2,000 a month, or, you know, they can afford $2,500 a month for three or four. It's very case by case, but loan workouts are generally for people who wish to stay in their home. They've run into some type of financial situation. Generally, they're only temporary financial situations. Again, a job loss, and, you know, they're out interviewing and intend to be back at work in 2 or 3 months.
So it's a job loss or a temporary medical situation, but it's something that's not like I can't afford to live in my house anymore.
Exactly. It's a good way to be. It's a temporary financial setback, not a, you know, like you said, if somebody's lost their job because they, if they need their hands for work and their hands got cut off or something, obviously, they're not going to get another job doing that same thing. Or like you mentioned, medical issues can be, catastrophic, or can be a temporary setback until you pay the bills off. So
so many of us are literally living with, you mentioned it in your situation, we're living with a reserve of only, sometime one paycheck away from just being in really bad shape. Some of us are don't have savings. We're borrowing money, or we have a credit card where we can write a credit check to borrow money, and that's our reserve. We don't actually have savings. So I could see how that all would go into the mix when you're talking to a lender and trying to get a workout agreement. So what types of things can a borrower do if they talk to their lender who wants to stay in their house? How do they talk to their lender? How do they convince their lender to do a workout agreement?
It's been the key to that. One of the, it's also standard in our short sale packages. I mean, it's the first thing you've got to do is call your lender, tell them what's going on. Don't, you know, we're guilty of it. My wife and I both are. Don't dodge the phone calls and not call them back. Call up your bank. You know, as soon as, and even if you can see it coming, even if you're current on payments, haven't missed a payment yet, call them up and say, hey, I know my payment's going up by $200, $400, $800 a month next month. I'm not going to be able to afford that. Let's work something out.
Will they talk to you if you're not late? I mean, I always thought that they wanted to see a real delinquency before that you got into this loss mitigation process. That's not true?
Yeah, no, we've done actually working on quite a few of them now. Easiest way to summarize that, banks are much more willing and much more motivated to work with you once you are late. If you're not late, don't want to get off too much of a tangent here, excuse me. But your loan is still considered a performing asset by the bank. Once you miss a payment, once you're 30 days late, your loan is considered a non-performing asset. Red flags go off at the bank, and they, again, get much more receptive to working with you. If you happen to, and again, don't suggest doing this because it doesn't leave you much time, but, you know, if you wait a week or 10 days before your foreclosure, again, banks are going to be very motivated and very anxious to work with you. Sometimes they will, sometimes they will not move the foreclosure date, but, again, once you're behind on payments, yeah, it's an instantaneous. They definitely want to work with you, and they're much, much more responsive. If you're not behind on payments, but you know it's coming, again, some banks will in some instances, and some banks won't. It's not. I can't tell you. GMAC always insists you miss payments, or it's really been a case by case basis. When we first were doing these, again, they were definitely much less receptive. Most of the ones we tried that were not behind yet on payments, banks would not deal with us until they missed a payment. So that's how it was, how it is today. Banks are, we're working on it again, probably 100 plus short sales. I know we're working on more than 100 short sales currently, and I would bet at least 30% of them are homeowners that have not yet missed a payment.
Yeah.
So again, yeah, they're open to that, but it's a little more time consuming.
Now, in terms of a workout agreement, what's the process of trying to get a workout agreement?
I mean, got off on a tangent there. The bank, again, wants to know what your hardship is, wants to know what's going on. And then successfully doing a workout agreement is going to completely depend on your ability to show the bank, hey, we are able to pay. They want to see tax returns, bank statements, pay stubs, savings, assets, what you have. You'll need to prove to the bank that, hey, this setback, whatever it is temporary. We've got the money, or we've got the money now. We just need to adjust the payments, or, you know, in 2 months, I'm getting a raise, or I'm going to be able to cash a CD or something. It's very much contingent on, in either the homeowners or, you know, if you hire us or, you know, your consulting company, being able to show the bank, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones are only going through a temporary financial setback. You know, Mr. Banker, option A, we do a loan, you know, modification, loan workout, or option B, you could potentially, you know, Mr. Bank get stuck with this property. And again, that's where my short sale experience comes in. I can go into the list of reasons why the bank does not want to, you know, get stuck with another property, adding to their REOs. And again,
it's a sales process, really understanding where the lender's coming from and selling them on why it's to their advantage to do business in the way you're suggesting.
Absolutely.
Do you ever get people's, we mentioned this very common, you mentioned payments going up. You said, what if your payments are going up? Call the bank. Do you ever get workouts where the bank will agree not to raise payments or to cap them or to otherwise modify the monthly payments?
Yeah, banks, it's one of most of the ones we've done, they're actually looking for an answer from us. You know, it's, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Jones have a mortgage at $2,000 a month. It's about to jump to $3,000 a month. And again, one of the first things they ask, well, what can they afford? You know, what can we do to help? And it's definitely in your best interest before you call the bank to know, here's what my budget is. I can only afford $2,200 a month, $2,300 a month. I would definitely suggest you not, like any negotiation, you know, don't give them your maximum number right out of the gate. If your mortgage is at $2,000, it's going to $3,000 a month, you know you could definitely afford $2,600 a month. Tell the bank you can only afford $2,200 a month to give. Again, they might go for it, they might not. But again, it gives you some wiggle room.
That's a great,
you know,
tip.
Rather than, you know, playing your cards first, so it's a good.
Now, how detailed do you have to be in terms of showing them your income and your? Do you have to, for example, tell them what your, you know, your HBO package is part of your cable TV, or is that just too much detail in your opinion?
Different banks, we tend to overdo it in ours. With our short sales or with our loan workouts, to show them anything. The more you can show the bank, the better. I mean, if you can show them, hey, I'm bringing in 5,000, my wife and I are bringing in 5,000 a month net. And, you know, if you detail out, like you said, I'm paying this for cable, this for my cell phone, my computer, my kids, my food. They want to know that. The more details you can get, the better. We have a, again, with our package, we have a financial information form where we actually ask for that information ourselves to submit with our package. So, again, when we're submitting everything into the bank's going to know Mr. and Mrs. Smith make $5,000 a month. They've got this in savings. Their current expenses are, you know, $4,500 a month. Once this mortgage, you know, inflates, you know, goes up another $700-$800 a month, there's no way they're going to be able to afford it. And yeah, like you said, they want to know. You can't give them too many details, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The more you can give them, the better.
I see. So you really go into that, because I've heard we've had some other people that have said, don't give them all that much detail. You know, we have a sort of a higher level financial income, monthly expenses type of thing that they say, that's what you should give the bank, unless they ask for more, you know, don't give it to them. So I guess that's two different points of view on it.
Yeah, I've heard, it's funny, it's kind of more, who you listen to, we tend to, in my opinion, better to give them everything they want and more rather than, again, from being the consultant or the third party, it's difficult for me to collect documents from homeowners. I can speak with the bank today and they say, hey, Ben, we need to know how much John Smith's cable bill is. I've got to track down John Smith. He's got to find his bill, and it can delay things, you know, a few more days. If I've got all that stuff in my possession, I forward it to the bank, they've got everything, there's no reason why, you know, I can't get the bank on the phone and get them to make a decision. I have heard, as you noted, with short sales, and I've not had the problem with loan modifications yet, but I've actually spoken with, just like you said, loss mitigation reps that say, hey, you've sent in too much information, or if we call them, they say, definitely, this is the only thing we need. Don't send anything else. You know, we've heard I could call GMAC, you know, right now, call them in 10 minutes and get two different things. So it's,
I see. So it's
very
who,
subjective.
It's the officer or the rep that you're dealing with that a lot of times. So certainly
exactly.
Somebody thinking about this, they should be prepared to get all this information, but they don't necessarily have to start there. In other words, they could fill out an abbreviated income statement and say, these are my expenses. And
absolutely.
Maybe that would be enough. And then maybe they don't have to go to the trouble that sometimes people go to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it was one of the, again, I had what I thought was a clue before we did the bankruptcy, but it was one of the requirements for our bankruptcy that we had to do, as you noted, a very specific thing. And I was shocked how much money we were, and it made, looking at it that way, it made sense. But once you realize what you spend for gas, for food, for going out, again, for all of your utilities, for insurance, you'll understand real quick why, you know, why you're upside down or why you're in the position you're in.
That's really interesting. I know the bankruptcy financial information is extremely detailed because they do want to know your cable bill. They want to know the allowance you give to your kids. They want to know everything. And when you do write it down, it is shocking because I haven't written it that way before, but we have seen it with our credit cards every month and whatnot. It's shocking how much money we goes out here.
Yeah, I never. I can tell you something right now. I know my minimum number before there's any fund money, as I sit here right now, is $8,250 a month,
mm-hmm.
and we're. Like I said, I was just shocked. It just, like I said, you start adding up every single dollar. It was one of the books I read. You should, just for 30, or even for a week, the best if we do it for 30 days, every dime you spend, write it down.
Wow.
I spent $5 for this, $6 there, and it's totaled up at the end of the month. And it gets really clear, you know, what kind of financial position you're in. And you said it all makes sense. One of the, again, few benefits of the bankruptcy was doing that for us. And we always encourage our homeowners to do that as well, just so they can see, you know, why we really are, you know, not doing what we're supposed to. So
now when people try to talk to the lender, where are situations where the lender is just not going to say yes, where someone may want to work things out and stay in their home, but the lender's not going to agree?
A lot of times we can have problems, particularly now with the credit markets being what they are. Again, we didn't really have that because of the bankruptcy, but self-employed people, if you have trouble proving your income, you can have problems. And that, I would say, is probably the biggest one. If you don't have a lot of assets and you can't really prove that, you know, we were paying $2,000 a month and now, you know, we can afford, you know, X. I don't know specifically, but you've really got to be able to document that without some kind of proof, pay stubs, you know, written letters from your employer or from where you think.
The bank really wants to know if they're doing a workout. The takeaway for our listeners is the bank wants to know that you can make the payments that you've agreed to and that your income, the amount you have left over after the necessities of life will allow you to pay that mortgage payment reliably.
Absolutely. Yeah, they want to, there's, again, it's that gray area. They want to know that you're not, you know, just stalling, you know, that you're legitimately, you know, in 2 months, 6 months, whatever, you know, we work out or the homeowner works out, that you're going to be able to do that and that they're not going to, you're not going to make two payments and then be right back to square one and now all of a sudden, you know, the bank's no, really no better off or worse off than they were before. So they, you know, like you said, that you've really got to be able to document that. We've been able to do some where, again, they were even the stated income loan modifications. But, again, it's a lot of work. You know, it's, the more documented, the more you can show, the easier it is.
So if somebody has a situation where a lot of their income is not documented somehow, they're going to have a tougher time of it, but it's not impossible. It's just you got to be creative about how you can prove to the bank that that you can afford those payments.
Exactly, exactly. And like I said, once, unfortunately, again, from what I've learned, that there's, it's almost like a, you're the glass ceiling. This is like a steel ceiling that's at the bank. So the loss mitigators and most of the people you'll actually speak with on the phones are people that just don't, kind of like I was saying earlier, get the bigger picture of why it's in the bank's best interest to do everything they can to work stuff out with the homeowner, why it's in the bank's best interest to do everything they can to avoid taking back a property. If you're able to, and I don't, I have not spoken with a homeowner that's done it, but if you're able to speak with the asset managers, those are the executives, the big boys at the banks, big girls, be politically correct, that again, they get the bigger picture. They're the ones that understand, you're absolutely right, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we need to get this handled. We need to find something that everybody's comfortable with and get this worked out. You know, again, whether it's a loan modification or whether it's a short sale, they understand, like I said, the, maybe on a different call, you know, the bigger picture and the real reason why, you know, banks do not want to get stuck with properties. It's the reason a lot of banks are going out of business. There's a, actually a website, I believe it's M like Mike, L like Larry, dash implode, ml-implode.com.
The mortgage implode meter.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually keeps track of all the banks that are going out of business.
Yeah,
no longer.
It's just amazing. Yeah. Well,
yeah, well,
what you've said, though, Ben, is real interesting. You've said that really it's quite viable for somebody to present a package if they know how and get their payments reduced, not just. Now, what happens to the arrears? Do they always insist on the arrears being paid over like 6 months, or could those be added to the loan balance? What's been your experience with the workout?
There are banks that unequivocally want to get, you know, all of their money as soon as possible. But again, case by case basis, we've been able to add them on, like you said, to the back of the loan, or again, depending completely on the person's ability to pay. You know, banks much prefer to, you know, if you owe $3,000 in interest, they much prefer to add, you know, $500 a month for 6 months to your, you know, to your next six payments. But again, it's case by case. The longest we've had one go out was over 24 months. Again, to spread payments out. The bank was fine with it. The homeowner could work on it, and we.
Oh, that's nice.
I've only had a handful of them, you know, actually come back where they couldn't afford it. But again, it's the big thing. If I could tell anybody one thing, don't. If I could stamp this on everybody's forehead, don't avoid the phone calls. Call your bank. If you're scared or worried about calling the bank, call me. Call, you know, Mr. Geller on the phone as well. Then, you know, let us talk to the bank, at least initiate things with your lender and explain the situation. You know, we can handle everything A to Z. Homeowners, believe me, anybody listening, you're more than capable of handling everything A to Z. It's just a matter of, you know, kind of, my parents always told me, accept responsibility for what's happened or what you've gotten yourself into. You know, get it worked out and get moved on. And you know, like I said, I've been there and gone through it. And I wish I'd have made the decision to do the bankruptcy sooner so I could have been out of it sooner and done with it sooner. But
and I do want to emphasize, in most your situation, which is very illustrative because you had so many properties with so much going on, but for most of our listeners, they just have one house, and bankruptcy, they should talk to a bankruptcy lawyer, but they'll probably find a bankruptcy not necessarily their best option.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would caution anybody to speak with a bankruptcy attorney, as quite honestly, it is a last resort if you're unable to get anything done with the banks. And I interviewed actually four bankruptcy attorneys before I actually chose the one I did. They're all, again, just common sense. Most of them are going to push for the bankruptcy because, you know, they're not getting paid for giving you free advice. You know, they can charge you $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 to do your bankruptcy. It's money in their pocket. It doesn't affect them personally, their credit. So keep that in mind when you're talking with them. But, yeah, I would absolutely suggest, you know, sitting down, going over your finances, realizing what you can and cannot afford, if you want to stay in the house, call your bank immediately, work something out with them. Like you said, their banks are very, very receptive to, you know, if you owe them $10,000 because you haven't paid your mortgage in 3 or 4 months, they're, like I said, they're very receptive to spreading those payments out or adding them onto the back and writing a new loan, because they don't want to get stuck with the property, and they'd much rather have you, you know, in the house paying them. They're happy. Their shareholders are happy.
This is great news for people listening. Now, what about the, let's sort of shift a little bit to the short sale. We've got somebody who is either unable to work things out with their bank, or they're unable to afford to live in their house. I mean, there's just no way that they can live in their house. They owe more than the house is worth, or what is the term, upside down. So what is the process? Maybe you could take us through the process, and maybe if you have someone you're working with or have done recently and changed their details so we don't know who they are, it would be helpful to hear a real story.
Certainly, yeah. I think a couple of stories that you probably don't want to hear.
Many.
Again, things can be very, very difficult to deal with, but again, the general process, once you make the decision, hey, I need to sell, or I've got to get rid of this house, you know, as Richard was saying, you know, to avoid foreclosure, the short sale process begins. If you're doing it yourself, same thing, you can call the bank. Each bank is different as far as what they require in their short sale packages, and that's, again, a short sale package is a list of, ours are about 30 or 40 pages long, but they're anywhere from 5 to probably 25 at a minimum. And some of the things those will include, and again, we've got this on our website, a hardship letter. Bank's going to want to know what's going on. It's an expanded version of the loan modification package. They want a hardship letter, and the hardship letter explains, again, what your situation is, why you're having trouble making the payments. They want financial information, again, W-2s, tax returns, pay stubs, bank statements. They want to see how much money you're making. In addition to that, with your short sale package, kind of bouncing around here. I'm not certain for homeowners, but I know from us, but banks won't even consider a short sale until you've actually got a sales contract in place. Best way to get that, again, call us, call a neighbor, call a friend, find a real estate agent, have him determine what he thinks he or she thinks your home is worth. Use an example. He may think, you know, retail average price in your neighborhood is $400,000. Have that real estate agent list your house for about 10% less than what the home is worth. Again, in this instance, we have them listed at about 360. The reason for this, I have not had any luck getting a short sale through without a contract. Is one of the things that's required in the short sale package. But again, when your home is listed, again, roughly 10% below everything else in the neighborhood, if and when you know, somebody buys in the area, you know, more than likely you're going to be one of the first ones to get a contract. That contract again is something you need to submit.
So let's get clarity even more. This is great information. Let's get some clarity here. If you do a short sale, you, the homeowner, are going to be arranging the sale of your house either through a broker or on your own, and you're not going to see a dime of that money. Your lender is going to get all the money, and in return, they're going to forgive the rest of the loan. So they're going to let you walk away, and they've taken all the proceeds from the buyer. But those have been insufficient to pay off your loan. So in a way, you don't really care how much you sell your house for, because you're not getting any of the money anyway.
Correct. Yeah, it's one of these two things, clarities on that. I mean, you, with the short sale, you are not allowed to receive a dime of the proceeds. Again, if you owe $400 and you sell it for $350, you know, there isn't any money left over for you anyways. Something else that you absolutely need to be aware of, that shortage, that $50,000 shortage, again, you owe $400, you get a contract and sell your home for $350. A couple of things can and will likely happen with that $50,000 shortage. Option number one, and again, something we, in our contracts, we always make it one of the contingencies. I would, again, very, very strongly recommend, I'm going to jot this down, ask them to waive their right to file a deficiency lien or deficiency judgment against you. What that is, in layman's terms, the bank will have the right to sue you for that $50,000 shortage. They can come after you at any point in the future. I think it's one of the big reasons I ended up doing the bankruptcy. And again, sue you via lien, and how that works. You owe $400, you sell your house for $350. You know, hey, I'm out of here 5 years from now. You decide to buy a house, you buy a house. Again, 5 years from now, and 7-8 years from now, you go to refinance that house or sell that house, you could very, very easily find the banks tied up that a $50,000 lien on your property. So when you go again to refinance or sell that house, bank's going to get their $50,000 again that you, excuse me, that you left, you know, on the table when you did the short sale. So that when you're negotiating with the bank, always, always first and foremost, ask them to waive that deficiency. About 80-85% of the time, the bank will agree to waive it and not come after you. Do banks do that very often? As I sit here, I don't know anybody personally that has had a bank come after them. The bankruptcy attorney that did mine and a couple of the other ones I talked to said it's generally anywhere from 3 to 7 years later before the banks will come after anybody.
Yeah, and the lawyer that we had on recently, he added to that because he said that if you are in a situation where you had to do a short sale or a foreclosure and where the bank could technically or legally go after you for the deficiency, which is not always, they can't always, it depends on your state and what type of loan you have.
Okay, right.
He said that you could actually then file bankruptcy in that case later if you had to, because that is just a plain old unsecured judgment. So the worst that happens is you'd have to file bankruptcy. So that's what he says. And he said that he's in California, by the way.
Mine was in Virginia. I know what I say is 100% true in Virginia. The other states, I would certainly suggest you speak with your attorney if you're in D.C., California, Utah, anywhere. But with that deficiency lien, in summary, in bankruptcy, again, at least in Virginia, every debt you have can get wiped out except taxes and child support. So your deficiency liens, if you owe credit cards, car payments, any of the liens, all that stuff, again, can get wiped out. So what he says is 100% true.
But now on the short sale, we're talking with somebody, let's say, who has, they look out their window up and down the street, and they see for sale signs gathering dust. Nothing is selling.
Right.
But you're saying that if they can lower the price on their house enough, they might be the one house that does sell, and then they present that contract with appropriate package of paperwork to their lender. The lender may accept whatever that price is as full payment for that loan.
Absolutely.
That's a short sale. And so the unique thing is that a person who's listening today who cannot stay in their house, that they can be the cheapest house in the area, they can sell their house quickly, they could get out from under if their lender agrees, and if they present the package correctly, a lot of times the lender will agree and walk away without facing any huge issue in the future.
Correct. Yeah, there's the two ramifications. Banks, again, quote-unquote, write off the loss or agree to the loss by either, again, option A, filing deficiency lien, or option B, again, what banks are much, much more likely to do, they can file a 1099 against you, which means that $50,000 shortage will get reported as income on your taxes. I just learned about this about 4 or 5 months ago. I would suggest you can contact me, and I'll give you the name of my accountant. But there's an IRS form, if you want to write it down. It's IRS Form 928, IRS Form 928. And what that is, that actually gives – it's very similar to the hardship letter. It's a form you'd submit. If the bank decides to 1099 you, you get this form 928. You submit that with your taxes, and again, it's very similar to a hardship letter. You explain to the bank, "Hey, here's what happens. And here's what my situation was. Here's what happened."
The rule, the law is that the attorney that we had on explained this, the law is that if you're insolvent when the loan amount is forgiven, then you don't have a tax liability. So you fill out a worksheet for the IRS on that form that you mentioned, form 928. And then the 1099 doesn't count as income anymore, and that's the end of it. So it isn't true that you will have a tax liability, as many people think, for an amount of the short sale, the proceeds that are forgiven. It's in fact, if you're insolvent, you don't have that, and that's the law. And so, if it's done right, you really won't have a problem with the IRS, is what we've been doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But again, it's be aware of what could happen. So, like that's. Again, I'm sure the reason you mentioned it, Richard, I want to make it clear as well that you are aware that once you do a short sale, you'll either see something from the bank mentioning a judgment, a deficiency lien, deficiency judgment, or you'll see the 1099 mentioned. And again, as Richard and I both stated, there are ways to get around having to pay any of that back. But don't be surprised when if those forms pop up in your mailbox. That's what they are. But it's, again, just part of the process.
Now, we have a program which we teach people where they can sell their home in 9 days using a round-robin process. And the advantage of that is that if for some people who are able to do that, they don't have to rely on a broker who just may not market their house very well. What's been your experience with brokers versus selling the house yourself?
So now I'm, again, being a real estate investor, I've certainly gone through, quote-unquote, quite a few agents. There's two agents I use now that are phenomenal. But, yeah, particularly if you've got a house that's over-financed, again, most agents, if you find one that's willing to list it, most are not going to put much effort in, you know, unless you agree, hey, I'm willing to do a short sale on this. I guess what I basically just finding an agent, you're going to want to I would definitely call around if you know any real estate investors in the area. Any real estate investor is going to know who the better agents and better brokers are in your area. But I would kind of caught me off guard on this, but I would interview, I guess, quote unquote, interview some of the real estate agents, make sure they're familiar with short sales. I still, 2 weeks ago, actually gotten a heated debate with a real estate, a licensed real estate agent. She's been an agent for 2 years now out in this area. And she told me short sales were scams and they couldn't be done. And again, that mentality is out there. Obviously not somebody you want working on the short sale of your home, but you know, when you're looking to hire an agent, ask them if they've done short sales, if they're familiar with the process. If you've taken notes on what I've said, or again, feel free to contact myself or I presume Richard as well. And we can give you, you know, some questions to ask the agents to make sure they do know what they're doing. They do understand, you know, all these, you know, your offers are, what's called subject to third party approval or subject to bank approval. It's something that has to be in the listing. So when the agent's going to go to list your house, you owe $400 is listed for $360. Again, in Virginia, I know this to be true. In the comments section of the listing, they have to write in subject to third party approval or subject to bank approval. And again, that way when the offer comes in, you know, the person's not thinking, wow, there's a $400,000 house. I just got a deal on it at $360. Well, if the short sale goes through, they will get the deal. You know, they'll get a deal at $360. It does happen. The banks, it's getting rarer and rarer now, but you know, some banks will not discount. They won't. And again, it's absolutely a case by case basis and absolutely based on how you present your, I'm definitely not an attorney, but I always say this, it's totally depending on how well you present your case to the bank. You know, you present, here's what's going on in the neighborhood, here's my situation, here's why you don't want this house. Again, so when their potential buyer agrees, writes a contract at 360, they have to understand, your agent absolutely has to convey to them that, you know, this contract is not necessarily good and accepted until, you know, the short sale is done and complete. And again, short sales can take, the quickest one we've done, 6 days, and I've got some, I think two of them now we've been working on for the better part of 5 months. So yeah, no rhyme or reason. It's just some banks are on the ball and get things moving and some don't. So
what happens with a homeowner where it's taking 5 months? Are they making the payments?
These two are, they're not making payments. And it's a lot of stuff I could share. Some of the longest one I've had, I actually worked on a short sale for a woman who was 16 payments behind. The bank had still not initiated any, she had not made 16 payments she missed, and the bank had still not even begun foreclosure proceedings. So why, I can't tell you off the top of my head. I think Ocwen was the name of the mortgage company. And again, in Virginia, once you're 90 days late, the bank has the right to come after you or foreclose on the property. Ocwen, on this one, the lady was 16 payments behind. No idea why Ocwen waited so long or never did, but during the process, generally speaking, I guesstimate 80% of the time, during the process, the bank will not initiate foreclosure proceedings as long as, you know, you the homeowner, have submitted a contract, you know, myself, Richard. Once the bank knows an offer's on the table, again, they know that's their first and best choice is to work something out with you, the homeowner, you know, with my company, with Richard's company, rather than, you know, initiate foreclosure. I've read and seen it posted in several places, and in Virginia, the average cost to a bank for foreclosure is $40,000 per property, and attorney's fees, lost interest, and, you know, again, that being the point, you know, banks want to do everything they can to, you know, delay the foreclosure. Again, we've, on quite a few occasions now, a homeowner will call, hey Ben, it's Monday, my house is going to foreclosure on Friday, can you help? we get moving pretty quickly and submit an offer into the bank, and the bank will stop the foreclosure auction, you know, again, until we're able to work something out. So, you know, it's possible to get the auctions moved, but again, you just want to be on top of things, I guess.
I don't think you'd want to wait that long.
No, yeah. You want to, like I said, the best thing you can do, as soon as you know you're going to be in trouble, don't delay. If you're going to hope for something, I hate to tell anybody not to hope for things, but be reasonable when you hope. That was, somebody said that to me again when we were going through it. We were hoping those 9 houses we got stuck with were going to sell, when in reality, I was aware of what the market was. Now, I knew it was very, very unlikely, you know, that these things were ever going to sell. And again, it cost me, again, many more sleepless nights than I needed. It cost us a lot more money than we needed to spend. So be reasonable. You know, don't ever lose hope, but be reasonable when you're hoping, you know, for your home to sell or hoping for something to happen. I said best.
But if you do a short sale, you can sell your house at significantly below what the perceived market value is. And
absolutely.
So all those dusty for sale signs in your neighborhood, yours isn't going to be one of them, because yours is the one that'll sell first.
Yeah, absolutely. They're again, we tell people when they call, you know, if you can price your house, you know, below market, you're going to be able to sell quick. And you know, if you can afford, you know, to do so, and you don't mind, you know, taking a little of a hit on some of the equity you're going to make, especially in this market in Northern Virginia, drop your price as soon as you can.
Well, and of course, in a short sale, you have no equity, so you don't really care.
Exactly. Yeah. In a short sale, exactly. You want to price that thing where it's going to sell, so you can get out, be done with it as quickly as possible. And just like Richard said, you know, drop your price. I mean, don't be afraid. When we submit our offers, again, I heard this from somebody I learned from. They told us when we initiate our short sales, again, we always submit our first contract to get things going. They tell you should be embarrassed by your first offer. I mean, get something in, get it low. It gets the bank off their rear end. It gets them, you know, it gets them involved in the process. It gets them out there, you know, determining a value. So now you're going to know, hey, I owe $400 on my house. I tried to see if they'd take $300. They won't take $300, but I now know they will take, you know, $340 or $350. So,
yeah, if you expose your home to the market and it turns out the market is 70% of what you thought it was, I guess chances are you're going to convince your bank that's what your house has to sell at.
Yeah, a problem we still run into. You're short. The number one key to your short sale is that BPO. That broker's price opinion will completely dictate what the bank's going to do and not do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tricks, and I would definitely write this down, you can insist that the bank do an interior BPO. An interior BPO is different from a regular BPO in that the regular BPO is generally, as I said earlier, just a drive-by. The agent will get in his car, literally drive past your house one way, past your house the other way, go home and write something up. If you insist on an interior BPO, and again, tell them, hey, we've got a problem here, I've got pets, I've got whatever it is, even a brand new home, do what you can to get the agent in there, explain to them. Another dirty little trick, but guilt far and away is the best thing for negotiations. You know, if you can tell them, hey, I don't want to lose my house. I only mention this because I know girls who have done it. Ladies or guys, too, if you can do it. If you can shed a tear or two in front of that agent, he's going to do everything he can to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the lower that BPO agent's price comes in, the more likely you are to get things done and be moved on. If you can get your agent, again, another trick. You're going to need to get your house listed. A lot of banks, again, actually require that before they even consider the short sale, because they want to see that at least you've made some effort to sell the property. Whoever your real estate agent is, have them pull comps or comparable sales in the area, and have them pull the low comps, the 2, 3, 4 houses if you can get it, houses in your general area that have sold for the lowest prices. That's something, again, if you can hand that information to the BPO agent, you're going to save him or her some time. They're going to say, hey, you know, you're right. Ben owes $400,000, but the house across the street just sold for $350, and the house, you know, 2 streets over just sold for $370. So yeah, I think, you know, Ben Benita's house should be priced at $360 or $350. You know, somewhere thereabouts. You know, like I said, it's again like an attorney. It's all about proving your case. You're going to find there's a lot of pieces, a lot of players involved in the short sale, and you know, the more people you can get on your team and, you know, sympathizing with you or understanding what you're going through, the better off you're going to be. And, you know, generally speaking, when it comes down to it, it comes down to price, you know, selling real estate. If you can You know, if you can sell your house for 10, 20, 30% less than what your neighbor's asking for, you know, the next buyer that comes to your neighborhood is going to jump all over your property because he or she thinks she's getting a deal. That's just...
But the thing is that you want to do is you want to make your house look as unappealing and unattractive as possible without misleading anybody when it comes
right.
time to get in the BPO. And then, of course, when you sell your house, you want to make it look like a deal.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, we've... funny story, ran into that situation on several occasions. People think anytime somebody comes to the house, they've got to clean up. Well, yeah, when that BPO agent's coming over, again, if you can tolerate it, don't clean, don't pick up anything for a couple of days. As Richard said in summary, the uglier your house, the better, the more likely you are to get that lower number. If you call the maid service to come in, get your kids to pick up their clothes, their toys, you know, fix that hole in the drywall, you know, put that door back on the hinges, you know, wipe off that moldy ceiling or something, all bad things before the BPO agent comes. The uglier your house is, again, as Richard said, the more likely you are to get that lower number, and that's really what you're looking for with the BPO. You want it as ugly as possible, and then, yeah, as soon as the BPO agent's out of there, yeah, clean your house up, get it looking nice for, like you said, for the retail buyer, and you should be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very, very interesting. That's very, very helpful information. We've covered a lot of ground here. Is there anything that you would also want to tell our listeners that maybe we have left out? Or?
Just in summary, like I said, the number one thing, if I could tell everybody in any kind of situation like this, take action. I mean, in life in general, if you want to lose weight, find a great mate, do something with your house, take action, get it done today. As soon as you get off this phone call, as soon as you're done listening to it, pick up the phone, call your bank, explain to them what's going on, and get it done. The sleepless nights can end. I mean, there's no reason. Again, I made the mistake going through it myself. I beat myself up for, again, 4 to 6 months before we made the decision to do bankruptcy. I could have saved a ton of money, a lot of sleepless nights, you know, not nearly as much stress on my relationship with my wife. Could have had a lot more fun with my kids. Again, had I made a decision sooner, but again, admittedly, I was afraid. I did not know what to do. I was scared to call the banks, didn't know what they were going to say. I was worried about losing my house, getting kicked out of my house. Again, if you don't know what to do, call your banks, call Richard, call me. I'm happy to give you, some more of my time and tell you how things are going to work out. But yeah, that's the number one thing. Just stop worrying about it. Stop worrying about it and do something about it. Probably the best thing I can tell you.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I really appreciate the time that you've given us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking with you.